Hello, I'm at the Big Society Network giving, what is it, what's the title, Sarah?
I think it's The Big Give.
The Big Give. It's an event that's brought together people from across sort of philanthropic, charity, third sector representatives who are here to talk about what all that stuff means and how we go forward with creative giving and harnessing philanthropic giving for good in the country. And I'm talking to Sarah Brown. And Sarah, you're from the Women's Resource Centre?
Yes, I'm the Head of Communications, yes.
And we were just talking in a group next door about corporate giving and mm-hmm. CSR, and a few people questioned the validity of CSR. Mm-hmm. But you brought up a point about the way that specialist charities fall under the radar.
Yeah, and it was particularly for us as a charity. We're an umbrella organisation. We support 350 women's charities across the country, and they do a lot of work ranging from rape crisis, domestic violence, refugees, maternity rights, equal pay, etc. And the point I was making is that we offer best practice to the organisations we support. And one of the things we are looking at is private philanthropy, raising funds, etc., because of the current budget cuts. But the issue is that a lot of the issues these charities work with are, frankly, not ones that traditionally would be very attractive for philanthropists and for corporates. They work with women from very vulnerable, marginalised communities, refugee communities, BME, LGBT communities, issues that some people just don't really feel they frankly sometimes want to associate their brand with, which we personally feel is wrong, because women, we feel, are the big society. And to be fair, we do know of many organisations who do fantastic work with women's organisations as well. But what we feel and what we were looking for today was kind of asking people about that kind of issue, that discrepancy. And what was interesting is the kind of people were talking about, well, it's about appealing to the skill sets that organisations have locally in your community. So pick with the local communities and engage with the skills they have around you and harness those. And they're also talking about, it's about the power of individual stories. And everyone who works in this community and works in the women's sector will tell you there are some incredible women working in there with very inspirational, very incredible stories of survival and recovery and success. Mm. And it's to really build on those and appeal in that way. And just kind of finally, a gentleman there made a very interesting point, which I'm now going to frantically scrabble in my notebook to find, because one of those catchphrases that comes up in these things, and it was appeal to their innovation effort. We have done a lot of work on social media, both our organisation and our members, and they, he said, by appealing to it innovation-wise, by the way, we're by the bathrooms, which is why the hand dryer keeps going on, so if you're wondering what it is, that's what it is. Which was by, we showed best practice by using social media and harnessing digital tools to enable women's organisations to reach out and work better with themselves and externally and internally. And so, he kind of made me think about, well, how do I really start encouraging women's organisations to engage and harness social and digital media and actually use it to fundraise, use it to show they are parts of the big society. So that's something I'm going to really take away from today.
I think that's a key thing, partly because first-person stories are powerful no matter what the subject is. Mm-hmm. If you've been following my audioboo things over the last few weeks, you'll know that I was up in Scotland talking to an old people saying we had trouble with their doors, that the people, the residents, couldn't get through these doors. Now, the doors that wheelchairs can't get through is an interesting story, but everybody's interested in that when you bring that down to being about their grandparents and mobility and respect and the right to actually get around, the way that we treat elderly people, something that's an interesting story.
If you said, for example, 82-year-old Betty, whose wife was a World War II veteran who worked in the local factories and walked every day down to a local village, but at the moment she can't because the store is closed, I mean, you guarantee somebody from that local community would donate something.
And especially if you talk to Betty yourself, and if Betty actually gets to tell us.
Betty would be wonderfully chirpy and be feisty and have great stories and has probably chased a mugger down the street with a handbag at some point, and as we've seen in the news locally. But that's also the kind of thing that we kind of talk about and encourage, and I mean, obviously the issue with women's charities is one of security and concern, and that's always something that comes up when we talked about innovation in that room, and I've talked about it at digital media conferences before, which is, it's all very well to have these fantastic tools, but certain charities, including charities working with children, as you were saying before, and vulnerable members of societies, have to be careful how they use these tools.
Yeah.
But that being said, there's no way they can't use them in an innovative manner to tell a story and, as a result, fundraise or campaign.
Absolutely. One of the other interesting things, I guess, that ties in with this that came up earlier on was that we heard from Molly Bedingfield, who runs Global Angels. Now, Global Angels acts as a meta charity. They don't actually do anything themselves. Mm-hmm. They are a kind of funding node.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that an organisation like the Women's Resource Centre can act like that, there is potential for there to be a meta body that actually redistributes, because a project dealing with Afghan women's rights in mm-hmm. London, they're going to really struggle to get to Coke and say, here, this is how this is going to help your corporate social responsibility image.
Yeah, I definitely think there's room for a model like that for women. In the UK, there are some organisations who do it. For example, Rosa for Women is actually one of our sister organisations. They hand out funds and grants every year. And the Women's Foundation, which has just developed in the past year or so, they are very interesting in terms of their transparency and in terms of they really want to donate all their money. Mm. And they've been looking at models of reducing back office costs, as far as I can tell from their information. Very interesting new model. So I think there is a knowledge. I mean, the Americans are way ahead of us here. Yeah. They're very pioneering in terms of funds for women that do that kind of thing, like you said. And the other thing is, Ms. Bedingfield pointed out, that they don't do the work themselves, they partner with organisations on a grassroots level, which I think is a fantastic idea. Mm. It gets away from that kind of what a lot of charities have been careful about in the past, is you do run the risk of looking quite imperialist if you do all the work yourselves. Yeah. Whereas if you acknowledge that you have to engage those people who've been on the ground for 25 years and know the issue inside out, you are going to be able to harness that much more effectively. You just provide the capacity building and the funding. So there is a model there, and I really hope that, you know, some very wealthy women listen to this and start thinking, hey, that's a really great idea to have a transparent facilitation tool that, you know, we can do online. And if you're out there, do call us. but yeah, I think one of the things that someone, and I certainly will be taking away today, is that kind of idea as well.
Finally, the odd thing about that for me is that it sounds very much like voluntary taxation. That actually the model that works best is a centralised pool in which really clever people analyse all the problems, and not based on sexiness or marketability, actually say, this is a problem that needs funding. So the example I gave earlier on was of Glasgow Rape Crisis Centre that I've done a talk for, where the funding they need is tiny compared to the benefit they can have by preventing two people from being either being raped or raping in the future, that actually the benefits of that are enormous in social terms, but also in financial terms.
Mm.
But it's not a cause that people get in touch with. Mm. But the example of Global Angels shows that people are okay with that when they feel empowered to assign where money goes. So I guess there's a big thing here for government about our relationship with taxation, that because we've got to the point where we have started to feel that it's a bad thing, when actually it's about efficiency in distributing money to where it should go and not relying on Coke and McDonald's to do it for us, because that seems insane.
Mm-hmm. It's difficult. I mean, the ethics issue is something I think that's going to come up a lot in the industry, and it's something that we've looked at, we you know, are very aware of, all organisations are aware of, and it's something we always keep in the back of our minds. What I think is interesting about the Big Society concept is that issue of transparency. I actually do think that's a really, really good thing. And that's something that I think, you know, a lot of organisations should work towards. Obviously, transparency is a very different issue from security for women's organisations. But I think the other thing as well is interesting that we're saying we're coming up with all the ideas in this big room and that we're going to go out and tell the world how great it is. I think one thing that the government must and has been and should really continue to do and must do more of is consult more on these issues. People on the ground who are working with these organisations, for example, Rape Crisis. I mean, there was a study, I can't remember the name of the organisation, it was a social return on investment study, and it found that for something like £1 invested in a Rape Crisis Centre, you got it back eightfold in terms of service to the community, which is incredible.
Yeah.
One of the most cost-effective things you can do is actually fund a Rape Crisis Centre, because it saves you hundreds of thousands of pounds in terms of, like you said, the courts, etc. So, you know, we would say, really, they are the ones with the knowledge and the expertise. Mm. Don't lose that. Particularly with dealing with marginalised and vulnerable members of the community. Don't lose that. You know, learn from it, gain from it, integrate it, and sustain it.
Sarah,
I'd
thanks.
Like to copyright that catchphrase, by the way, at the end.
Sarah, thanks so much.
Thank you.